Okay, so good afternoon. Earlier today, Minister Brownlee and Finlayson travelled to Greymouth to present the Royal Commission's report on the Pike River tragedies of the families of deceased men. The report makes for sobering reading. Today will be particularly poignant and difficult for those families whose loved ones perished at the Pike River mine nearly 2 years ago. Cabinet established this Royal Commission on November the 29th, 2010, because we believe this tragedy is a matter of significant public interest. We owed it to the families of those 29 men to find out what happened and why, and a Royal Commission was the most appropriate form of inquiry. We also wanted to find answers so we could do everything possible to make sure this tragedy is not repeated. The terms of reference make that clear. I want to thank Justice Graham Pankhurst, who chaired the Royal Commission, and Commissioners Stuart Bell and David Henry for their work. They oversaw an inquiry which was broad and wide-ranging, covering the causes of the explosion at the mine, the cause of the loss of life, the way the search, rescue and recovery operations were handled, and the resources available, the systems in place within the mine and the legislative framework for mining and health and safety. The Royal Commission found the immediate cause of the tragedy was a large methane explosion. The Royal Commission found that this tragedy was preventable, and that a combination of factors contributed to the terrible events of November the 19th, 2010. The first group of factors relates to Pike River coal itself, and the second relates to the regulatory environment in which it operated. I speak on behalf of the government when I say I regret deeply what has happened in terms of the lives lost and the suffering caused. While much of the fault for the tragedy lies with the Pike River Coal Company Limited, the Royal Commission also makes it clear that the regulatory environment was not effective over a long period of time. On behalf of the government, I apologise to the families, friends and loved ones of the deceased men for the role this lack of regulatory effectiveness played in the tragedy. Following the findings of the Royal Commission, Labor Minister Kate Wilkinson has tendered her resignation from that portfolio. Ms Wilkinson decided to resign. Ms Wilkinson's decision to resign is a personal decision in response to the magnitude of the tragedy. It is the honourable thing to do. I considered it proper for me to accept her resignation from the Labor portfolio. Ms Wilkinson retained her ministerial warrant and other portfolios. There were multiple operational and systemic issues with Pike River Coal. The company had a history of overpromising and under-delivering. Coal production was years behind schedule, and a lack of money was driving the company to find further funding. The business was new, and its systems, including those for health and safety, were in development. Because it did not follow good management and best practice principles, Pike's workers were exposed to health and safety risks. Simply put, its health and safety systems were inadequate. Pike River lost sight of its aim to be a productive and safe mine as the drive for production intensified. The mine was riddled with deficiencies, the potential for serious concerns about the hazards posed by hydro mining, wind blasts and a gas explosion were raised in an insurance risk survey in July 2010. Neither the board nor its committee ever saw that report. The coal mine was the first in the world to put its main ventilation fan underground. This decision was not properly risk assessed and the board did not give it due consideration. The Royal Commission report says this design was a major error. Pike was known as a gassy mine. However, its methane management system was well below par. Methane sensors were either broken, unreliable at the time of explosion, or not well sighted. In the 48 days leading up to November the 19th, 2010, there were 21 reports of methane levels reaching explosive volumes. These reports continued right up until the morning of the explosion. These warnings were not heeded. A second factor was the regulatory environment under which the Pike River mine operated. Under successive governments since 1992, the influence and reach of the mining inspectorate was eroded. The Commission found that while the Health and Safety and Employment Act appropriately placed primary responsibility for health and safety on the employer, this was seen by the Department of Labor as somehow reducing its responsibility to administer the legislation. At the time of the tragedy, the then Department of Labor had just two mining inspectors. They were unable to discharge their statutory functions adequately. Because these two inspectors had to cover all the mines and quarries in New Zealand, Pipe River was not scrutinised closely enough. The Royal Commission found the Department of Labour itself did not have the focus, capacity or strategies to ensure Pike was meeting its legal responsibilities under health and safety laws. The sad reality was that the department's performance in relation to health and safety in the mining industry had been so poor at both the strategic and operational levels that the department had lost industry and worker confidence. That is simply unacceptable. As the Royal Commission reports points out, New Zealand has had a history of underground coal mining tragedies, about once every generation. Lessons from the past learnt at the cost of lives have not been retained. Looking to the future, administrative and regulatory reforms are urgently required to reduce the likelihood of further tragedies. The Royal Commission has made a total of 16 recommendations covering administrative reform, stronger regulation, changes to mining legislation and emergency management. These recommendations carry a great deal of weight. Today I can announce the government will be broadly accepting all of the recommendations and will be working to implement them as quickly as possible. A small number require further investigation before they can be put in place. For example, the recommendation of the establishment of a new Crown entity focused on health and safety. Some will have an impact in relation to health and safety generally and are not limited to underground mining. Detailed design and implementation issues will need to be worked through, but the government believes it's already on the path to putting these into action, including legislative and administrative changes, and through the work of the Independent Task Force on Workplace Health and Safety. In the 2 years since the Pipe River tragedy, a large amount of work has been done to beef up the regulatory regime for workplace health and safety. All underground coal mines in this country have been safety checked and audited by the independent experts from the Australian mining industry. We've funded $1.5 million for a new high hazards unit, which has had a team solely focused on mining. And we've boosted funding for health and safety by $37 million. The Royal Commission acknowledges the steps already taken, but more is needed. A detailed implementation plan will be developed to consider the recommendations and any findings of the report that can be applied to the health and safety system generally. This is a priority for the government, and its intended recommendations will be implemented by the end of 2013 at the latest. No matter what we do, we cannot bring those 29 much-loved men back alive. We accept that there were systemic failures in the regulatory regime across successive governments. I speak on behalf of the government when I say I regret deeply what has happened, the lives lost, and the suffering that has been caused. Question.
Kate Wilkinson, in part to blame for what happened.
Well, I've reviewed as much as I can the paperwork that has gone to the Minister in the time that she's been the Minister of Labour, and there is no indication that any of her actions or inactions resulted in the tragedy that took place at the Pipe River mine. But what is true is that over the course of the last 20 years, the Department of Labour has essentially changed its processes and the way that it administers health and safety in areas like mining. What's also true is that they have changed the way that they have a functioning inspectorate and the resources that they get and the instructions that they give those inspectors. And so in the end, while none of her actions make her responsible for what took place at Pike River, the department has to accept its level of responsibility, as was pointed out by the Royal Commission. And she has done the only honourable thing as the head of that department in offering her resignation. It was a sad day that I accepted that, but I accept it's the honourable thing to do. I accept it's a personal decision, and I think she's done the right thing.
So we'll have to be rolling it departmental.
Can the department be charged anyone?
Well, there are always options available for people to consider all legal remedies, and they include the criminal remedies, which is essentially the process that Mr. Stilwell is currently being charged with. There are always civil proceedings that could be taken, but people would need to think through the merits of those, whether they would be successful in court, whether they want to pursue that option, I suspect. And some people will have a different range of views on the issue.
Will the government be taking any action that would be
Well, the government is essentially trying to now say, how do we learn from these experiences so that we don't get a repeat of these? And that's really where we're going. We're saying, look, there's got to be systemic change We are going to adopt in part or in full all of these 16 recommendations. There's already been substantial change in terms of the high hazards unit and the change in the way that we are operating. So this is a big wake-up call and learning experience.
Are you holding anybody else responsible or accountable in DRL?
Well, in the end, that is a matter for the chief executive, but the government takes its share of responsibility, and that is why the minister offered her resignation.
Wouldn't the more honourable thing be for her to resign from cabinet altogether?
Well, I think if you look at the historical position, and there's not a lot of precedence in this area, resigning from the portfolio is probably the thing that you would see, say, internationally in the British system, or occasionally you saw it with Russell Marshall in the Cave Creek disaster. Secondly, I think what you've got to say is, I believe Kate Wilkinson is a good minister. I haven't seen any evidence that she was either advised that there were issues. In fact, the advice that I've seen that's gone to her is that there was a build-up in the capability of the department. So neither, none of her actions or inactions arguably led to what took place at Pipe River. But the actions of the department over a long period of time mean that the department has to take responsibility, and she's the head of that. So I don't think she's in a position where she can't discharge her other responsibilities appropriately. As a good minister, I believe she can.
Weren't the actions of the department, I simply reflect on the legislative changes that go as far back as the 1990s, in which you effectively promoted the view that leave it to the employers to that they have the responsibility for health and safety rather than regulated heavily?
Well, I think you're right in saying there's been a change in the way that the department has looked to administer its responsibilities, and therefore the prescriptive nature in which it's issued instructions to the inspectorate. It's largely started to work on a high trust model, and the Royal Commission actually makes that clear in its report. But essentially, the company relied probably far too heavily on, the Department of Labour relied far too heavily on the company to carry out its own work in relation to mine safety. So you're right that there has been a change because of that legislative change over 20 years in the way that they do things. Now, there are also examples of very prescriptive regimes overseas where there's also been mine explosions. So we can't be absolutely sure that even if it was a more prescriptive environment, that there wouldn't have been this tragedy at Pipe River. But I think the Royal Commission's conclusion, and we agree with them, is that it's possible it could have been preventable.
Do you accept the Royal Commission's finding that there's a broader problem with safety in New Zealand workplaces?
Well, again, we are looking to substantially improve the safety across the board. I mean, if we take this away from the mining sector, there's already been quite a lot of work done in that area, and there will continue to be more work. And if you look at some of the recommendations that the Royal Commission has recommended that we are likely to adopt, they're not solely specific to the mining sector. We've already identified in 2011 the five areas which we consider to be of most significant risk to worker safety. Ironically, that didn't include mining because it was a very small part of it, but it was in areas like forestry and construction.
But the top recommendation is to create an agency specifically to deal with workplace health and safety. It doesn't sound like you're going to do that.
No, I don't think you can draw the conclusion we won't do that. I think what we are saying is that it's quite clear that workplace safety needs to improve across the workplaces of New Zealand. The Royal Commission itself has a report which looks at the accident rate per capita, I think, for various countries, and indicates that New Zealand's at the higher level there. That's obviously unacceptable. So there does need to be change. I guess what the government is saying is it hasn't, because this was a Royal Commission recommendation, and in the 6 days we've had the report, we haven't had enough time to determine whether an independent, standalone Crown entity would be the right approach. We're going to ask for further advice there. There would be pros and cons of that, obviously stripping that out from NBIE, so we need to think that through, but we'll come back to you as soon as we can.
What has the government today told the families about removing the bodies?
Well, the position really in terms of body removal hasn't changed. There has to be a safe and credible plan. And I think if you look at the Royal Commission's findings, it says a few things. Firstly, that there was no window of opportunity to go into the mine, despite the view of some. that they could have gone into the mine immediately. In fact, it points to examples of where there was there have been explosions in other mines very quickly after a major explosion. So they debunked the theory that there was that option. The second thing that they said was that they looked at the work of Professor Jim Galvin from the University of New South Wales when he did some work for the deed of settlement when Solid Energy bought the mine effectively from the government. And what Professor Galvin said was that re-entering the mine, in his words, was extremely unlikely, irrespective of the level of expenditure, and that re-entry was a remote possibility. He looked at and said the risks to those going in the mine could and would include potentially drowning, explosion, fire, roof collapse, and fungi and bacterial infection. So essentially, that aligns with the other advice that I've had from other mines experts, that this is a very dangerous and potentially very dangerous environment. And I understand absolutely, and I genuinely believe I've always understood the passion and the real need for those families to get closure by having their loved ones removed from the mine. I understand that completely. But I stand by what I've always said, which is we can only do that if it doesn't put at risk the lives of those who'd be asked to go and do that body removal process.
So there's no fresh commitment today?
No, well, there's no fresh evidence that's possible. When the position stands, as it always has, if there's a safe and credible plan, then we'll look at it. But as Solid Energy have said, and others, and as you all be aware, in the event that someone comes up with a safe and credible plan, I know that these the families have these international experts in New Zealand at the moment, I think, and in the end, that would have to be signed off by the high hazard unit. We can't put at risk more lives, even with an enormous desire to get in the mine.
The board's got the recommendation that there should be a workers' representative, a union representative who represents all the workers who can close the mine when there are genuine safety concerns.
Well, I think that's one of the key recommendations, that there was a dislocation between the workers and the management, and that if you read the report, it goes on to say there were various times where workers actually highlighted the real issues in the mine, and they weren't necessarily escalated up the chain. So again, I think that might be a valid thing to do. I know that would cause potentially significant disruption on the work site, but I think in light of the environment that these workers are operating in, that's probably a very credible thing to do.
If Wilkinson wasn't at fault, isn't she just being offered up as a sacrificial scapegoat? It sounds like heads should be rolling at DOL, not Cabinet.
Well, I can't. Firstly, the legal responsibility for anybody else who works in the Department of Labour is the responsibility of the Chief Executive. So any decisions about any other employees is a matter for David Small. Secondly, in terms of the government, I think in the end you have to understand that the minister takes this very personally and accepts responsibility for her ministry. And at the end of the day, 29 people lost their lives. The Royal Commission has come out and said that the company, and to a degree the Department of Labour, for which she was the minister, could have potentially prevented these men losing their lives. And that is a very serious issue, and I accept that there's a threshold there, but I think she felt very strongly that it was the honourable thing to do, and I think she's done the right thing.
People lose their lives on the roads every year. You don't see ministers of transport.
That's right, and people lose their lives in theatres of war. But in those environments, there are different issues. But this was a department where the department itself acknowledges that there was a failure over time to keep abreast of the best international practice. There was a failure to give the right instructions and resources to the inspectorates, and that while it's not certain, it's possible that if they had done their job better, it's possible that those men might not have died. If they'd issued a prohibition notice, it's possible they might not have died.
Do you believe the Labor government of 9 years should take some responsibility as well?
Well, I don't want to get in the blame game, because I think in the end that's not going to honour those 29 men. But I think it's fair to say that this is an issue that's solely arisen under our watch. It's been there really for 20 years now. Kate Wilkinson happens to be the Minister of Labour at the time this is taking place. And as I said, I haven't seen any paperwork that suggests any of her actions were in any way to blame. So I think those systemic issues have been here for a long period of time.
Do you think they started, though, about 92, 93, when those workplace safety measures?
Seems to be the indication that that was the starting point, but they've carried on for quite a period of time. I mean, back in 2005, the then Labor government commissioned a report looking at health and safety issues. Took quite a bit of time, actually, to get those submissions in. They eventually came in around about, I think, 2008, just before the change of governments, I think, remember, September 2008. They were published, and they were some of the ones that led to the views of the Royal Commission. Although I will say that I've seen some of the paperwork that went up to, I think, the minister from there, and it actually gave quite a different picture. It essentially said that we'd built capability and that we'd increase the number of spectrates. And even the Royal Commission in its findings says that if you look at the statement of intent and you look at the essentially public documents from the ministry, from the department, you wouldn't have got a picture that there was a problem. I think in the end, it's as simple as this. The company completely and utterly failed to protect their workers. And as a result of that, they were put in undue risk and an explosion took place that killed them. But I think that the department, if it had been adopting world's best practice and keeping up with what was happening in other mining environments like this around the world, would have had a different set of procedures. And in effect, it deluded itself that it was following the right process when in fact it wasn't.
This will lead to a philosophical change in that, because there has been that view that no company can put its workers at risk, they're responsible, so we should trust them to do it properly. I mean, will that really change the government's mind on that point?
Well, effectively, that's what the Royal Commission says, that the inspectors treated Pipe Rivers under a high trust model. In fact, that trust was misplaced. That, you know, while they found problems and errors in their quarterly inspections, they didn't raise them fast enough or didn't actually physically close the mine down. So I think it will change the way we do things. And look, it is inevitably going to lead to a far more prescriptive regime. That is the reality. But as the Royal Commission says, New Zealand's got to stop having these tragedies every generation. We have to learn from them and change the way we do things.
I can understand your hesitancy about moving to an independent autonomous Crown entity in that case, because you look at the history of it, perhaps some of these officials have been frightened to tell ministers what they thought might want to hear, because of the philosophy behind, you know, hands-off, self-regulation, trust employers, that had gone on for 20 years.
But it may prove to be right, and I'm not dismissing it, I'm just saying I haven't had any advice on it. And it's quite a big call. So in the course of 6 days, we've tried to look at the report, work our way through the report, and broadly the conclusion we've drawn is we're going to accept the recommendations of the Royal Commission. It's eminently possible we will accept that recommendation, but we just need to get more advice from our officials before we do that.
But doesn't this lead into the debate around the establishment of the Ministry of
Mobi?
Because there was an article that health and safety would get lost from such a large ministry, and because it's got the promotion of economic growth, business growth, etc., which at times health and safety issues run counter to, because they reduce costs, slow things down to make sure you do it right.
Yeah, but I think if, in the end, if you want to build a long-term productive economy, you can only do that in a safe working environment. I mean, if you don't do that, then ultimately you end up having very significant issues, the loss of life and the loss of confidence. So I don't think they may in the short term put more administration and maybe more burdensome for employers, but actually if they mean the long run safety of our workforce, then it's the right thing to do. The issue here is that I'm not entirely convinced that because it's part of Mobi that it would be drowned out and lost. There's an argument that being in the heart of the economic growth engine of the government's ministries puts it in the right place to arguably have huge influence in what's a big ministry. So there's two ways you can argue, I accept that. And that's why we just need to get some advice about what would happen if there was an independent Crown entity.
So cost is not a barrier now?
Well, in the end, no. We didn't consolidate that part of Department of Labour into Mobi for cost reasons. We did that because we thought that was the right logical home, because that's the area of economic growth and where these companies largely engage with the government.
Does that
Does that feed into another area of the Royal Commission's report where it looks at the transparency between DOL and the government, basically through the statements of intent and the annual reports? It says at the end of it, the gap between the high-level statements and those documents, the reality on the ground was remarkable. I mean, do you have concerns in that area and broadly in government that you're just not getting the feedback through the ministerial level through those documents, which are basically, glossy excuses for what's really going on?
I think that's a fair point, that there is a lack of good information coming up. And it feeds into what I've said to you. In the paperwork that I've seen so far that went to the minister, it paints an extremely different picture to the one that the Royal Commission points out.
So
it essentially says we've increased resources, we're spending more money, the increase in the health and safety levy that Labor brought in 2007 was pouring more resources in, there were more inspectorates, that there was 19 additional people, I think, inspectors added, that there were specialist people being employed in the technical areas of expertise like mining. So it paints quite a different picture. In fact, one of the reports from 2010 says that they're building capability and strength effectively. So it's quite a different picture to what the Royal Commission argues. But in fact, where you know there's a problem, though, is if you go and have a look at the Royal Commission's report in Volume 1, it says about the Department of Labour that at one point it showed the inspectors some of the health and safety reports that had come from the company, and that the inspectors were visibly shocked by what they saw. So that shows you there's a bit of a disconnect between what's happening on the ground and what's happening at the administration level.
So do you think
someone in the minister's office, you have liaison people, they must have known that the mining inspector was woefully under-resourced. I mean, maybe two inspectors. Irrespective of what the reports were saying, your ministers have their own staff who liaise with the ministries and should know. They have their own eyes into those ministries. They should know what's going on.
Well, on the reports that I have seen so far for the minister, and I don't see every report that they see, but in terms of, I've asked for the reports that are relevant in this area, and the ones that I've read paint quite a different picture. And if you ask the head of the ministry, I think what he will tell you is that their assessment of the way that they were doing things was that they had this issue under control. And in fact, the reality of what was happening on the ground was quite different.
So common sense would tell you that in an environment of zero budgets, no one is seriously building capability anywhere in the public service.
But I don't think you can be quite as simplistic or straight line as that. I mean, this is an area that did have an increase in funding, because it had the increased money from health and safety, it had more inspectors hired. I mean, they'd gone from, I think, 135 to 151. There had been more inspections taking place. I don't think it's quite as straightforward as that. I think it's much more deep-set, systematic in the way that it's the approach that's happening. One is about quite a low-touch, high-trust model, and one is a much more prescriptive model. If you look at what happened in Australia, they have largely moved to a more prescriptive, much more rigid regime.
So isn't there only one of two outcomes? Is either incompetence at the ministry, or that the ministry was trying to pull the wool over the minister's eyes? I mean, what else could it be other than one of those two?
Well, let's take a step back. Primary responsibility rests with the company. Okay, the law is quite clear. Primary responsibility rests with the company. That the responsibility from the ministry's perspective is as the regulator and the person or the entity that enforces the legislation.
And they seem to know of some problems at the company.
Well, I think what's fair to say is that they thought the situation was being properly administered. And I don't think they, in any way, shape or form, deliberately misled the minister. Nor do I believe that the minister was ever aware that there were systemic problems in the system.
So that shows confidence in the ministry.
Well, I think what we have to acknowledge is that they set off 20 years ago on a pathway of a relatively low-touch regime, when other parts of the world in this environment went down a pathway of more prescription.
And they set off on that pathway under the direction of politicians. They didn't make this up.
No, that's right. Well, I accept that.
Ultimately, the buck has got to stop the politicians and the philosophy and the ideology behind this.
But I mean, isn't that the point? I mean, the point we're saying is the minister has accepted responsibility as the responsible minister. The government has accepted that change needs to occur. And we are working our way through that as quickly as we can.
But you can't shift the responsibility at home to individual public servants who are just carrying out government.
Well, not arguing they are. I'm saying any individual responsibility, if there's further responsibility in the department, is the matter for the chief executive. But the Royal Commission itself has been very careful about not blaming individual inspectors or other people. The Royal Commission has been, I think, quite cautious in the way it's approached those issues. It has broadly shifted the responsibility back to two parties, primarily the company and then the government. And in terms of the company, that matter is now a matter before the courts. In terms of the government, we're adopting their recommendations, and the minister has, I think, done the right thing in offering her resignation.
I think you effectively said before that the Department of Labour thought that everything was kind of okay.
Yeah.
But it didn't, did it? I mean, there was, I can't remember if it was the second shaft or the second exit. They identified it wasn't done. It wasn't done, and they did nothing else to insist it was.
Correct. And so that's, if you look at Volume 1 of the Royal Commission's report, it basically says exactly that, that the Department of Labour's inspectors, when they went in their quarterly inspections, identified problems and issues, but they relied on the company's assurances that they would resolve those issues. And in the case of the second emergency shaft egress, they basically allowed them far too long to actually develop an alternative entry. So they relied a lot of times on the company's assurances that they would deal with these issues. Now, I can't answer why they did that. I don't know the answer to those issues, and in the end, it'll be for others to sort out, you know, why they took the actions they did or inactions that they did.
In the papers that you've reviewed from Kate Wilkinson's office, is there any mention of the request for a third inspector and any reason why that wasn't
correct? No, I mean, the issue around the third inspector, so basically there was a request by a group called the Mine Steering Group to the Workplace Services Management Team. It was declined in 2010, but was never escalated either to the Minister of Labour, and she had no knowledge of the request, actually, or to the quite senior management I've spoken to in the Department of Labour.
So do you know why it wasn't approved? Was it a
compliance
exercise or why?
I've got some paperwork on that, and I haven't really read a minute of it, but all I know is it was never escalated. It's taken at quite a low level, and they decided it wasn't necessary.
So just in terms of the check inspectors, which is one of the things Solid Energy in its submission didn't agree with that, but it did with the other changes, but the government's accepting that recommendation that there be
check inspectors,
and that includes the union inspectors who've got the power to stop work.
Yeah, so I mean, look, broadly we've said, look, we accept the report, we accept the recommendations, we need to work our way through the individual points, but you can assume we're going to err on the side of accommodating and adopting as much as we can.
What's happening with the police investigation into this, do you know? Is Peter Whittle going to face any more?
Well, my understanding, I could be wrong, is that he's been charged and he's due to appear in court in March of next year. But
he's been charged by the Department of Labour, there's also an ongoing police...
I don't have any advice on that, I'm sorry.
Do you think there should be further police charges later?
Well, look, that's a matter for the police. It would be wrong with me to offer them advice.
The report also suggests a review of the emergency services response. Were you firstly shocked that they were so underprepared, and secondly, how long would it take that review to get underway?
Well, I think there's a few things there. I mean, in the end, we in this country have largely relied on the police as the lead agency in any kind of emergency or disaster relief. There's quite a lot of logic behind that because of their capability, their expertise, their nationwide coverage, and their experience in these issues. But what the Royal Commission essentially, from what I can see, is saying is potentially the police shouldn't be the lead agency, or the lead should be someone with mining experience. Again, that's something we need to work through just to work out how that might work, because the police have legal powers available to them that others don't necessarily have. So I understand that, you know, that a police officer who may be a very good inspector might not necessarily be someone that's terribly skilled in mining issues, but they do have legal options available to them, and I think they I think the Royal Commission itself says they worked hard and they did everything they possibly could.
But they've never prepared, they've never done an exercise, they were woefully underprepared for an incident like this. And does that not surprise you?
It does a little bit, but that's the sort of thing we've learned to happen from there. I mean, in the end, I mean, the Royal Commission's assessment is that it's the same as the coroner's, that men almost certainly died immediately, and that re-entry, and there was no window of opportunity to re-enter the mine. And so I think in that regard, that put a lot of pressure on the families, and probably, you know, it would always be the most terrible circumstances, but it put a lot of pressure on those families, but probably in reality not a lot would have changed. But I think the Royal Commission's point is there could be another incident where actually people are alive and where we can get them. Maybe it's an environment that's not gassy like this, it's a coal mine, or a gold mine, or something like that.
So, saying that, how quickly can you get that review that they recommend underway?
Don't know. They're going to work on it straight away. Cabinet considered all these issues today, and relevant ministers are going off to start working on the issues.
Will the Department of Labour?
There'll be a task force that's looking at that, by the way, a group of three ministers, chaired by Stephen Lewis.
Will the Department
fit into that area? Though?
Well, just across the board. So, basically, there'll be three ministers. It'll be that, well, in the short term, the acting Minister of Labour is obviously Chris Robinson. It'll be Phil Hattie as Minister of Energy and Resources, and Stephen Joyce as the Minister of Economic Development. That Stephen will chair the group, and he'll be charged with working through the implementation of the Royal Commission's recommendations and making recommendations to Cabinet.
Will the Department of Labour faction within Moby be responsible for implementing the changes alluded to in the report?
Well, it'll depend, I think, a little bit on what happens in terms of its long-term structure, so we'll just need to work our way through that.
But surely they're the ones with the expertise?
Probably, but I'm just saying we need to work our way through.
Do you trust them to do it, given what we've seen in the report?
I think the department is trying very much to put its hands up and say, look, we acknowledge. They're not. The chief executive has been quite clear with me. He said, look, in the end, they took an approach that was there for a long period of time. He's a relatively new chief executive in terms of that, this responsibility, I think. But essentially, it's said anyway that at the end of the day, we need to change.
Is there any evidence of them questioning that approach?
I can't answer that question directly. We need to go and look at the paperwork.
And the issue around making directors much more responsible for health and safety, how important do you think that is? Because the board of this country basically threw its hands up and said, oh, nothing to do with us, we just know.
Yeah, so I think that's an issue for a start off. And I think there's also this issue of corporate manslaughter that's been raised by the families. So the Attorney General has made it clear to the families that he's going to get some advice on whether it would be appropriate to have corporate manslaughter legislation in New Zealand. And the reality of corporate manslaughter in the case of Pipe River is that it wouldn't do a hell of a lot because, as best I understand it, and limited form of advice I've had, and that's because they're usually financial remedies, and this is a company in receivership. But there could be other examples, and the UK has this legislation. The three cases that I had a look at this morning, there were financial payments made as a result of charges taken under this legislation.
Oh, have you been briefed on
the
MNP report?
I've seen it. My understanding is that the Minister of Justice is now going to go and consult with other political parties, see whether the consensus can be built and come back with some recommendations.
The missing element of the consensus is the National Party's position, isn't it, on the 4% threshold and the coattail?
Yeah, they have a perspective. I mean, the National Party put in their submission. I mean, their view is that 5% is the appropriate level, and you've got to make a point and you can sort of pick your poison if you like. They hold the view that's the right level, but that's not necessarily totally unique. I mean, New Zealand First, you could make a case would benefit from a lower threshold potentially, also argue strongly that it should be retained at 5%.
There's been some reaction to your use of the word gay in describing him as red shirt. What's your thoughts on that and what do you mean?
Oh, it's just a slang term. I mean, it's in the Oxford Dictionary, so it doesn't really mean it as anything offensive. I mean, it's just a slang term you hear people using.
What do you understand it to mean now?
Weird, as in, you know, just giving them a hard time.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Young people use it all the time. I don't think too many people would be offended by it. If someone does, I apologise for it, but I mean, it's not exactly like a term you don't hear every week.
Pick it up for your kids.
Yep.
So you don't see this coming so bad?
No. I mean, look, I'm voting for gay marriage. I probably have a vote to lead the charge on it.
Okay.
Does gay marriage queer?
Sorry?
Is gay marriage
no, queer? Not in the slightest. I'm happy to support it.
But you, the term that you describe gay as weird.
Well, not. I just mean it as in, like, sort of. I was just giving him a hard time. It was red. And our colours are blue, you know.
What day do I come?
Yeah.
Do you accept that it's perhaps an unfortunate choice of words?
Yeah, probably. But I mean, look, a hell of a lot of people would use it. It's in common use in the Oxford Dictionary. You're telling me someone's offended by it, I'm sorry.
What about the David Beckham comment?
Well, I'm not going to engage in what someone thinks they heard I say. You know, at the end of the day, you know, just leaving this is.
So you didn't say it
now? I'm going to have to wrap this up.
Well, all I'm saying to you is that I'm not going to engage in what some person has reported me saying. Because it may or may not be correct.
Do you think David Beckham's smart?
He's smart. He's made more money than I have. Okay, thanks very much.